We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode and catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Basically told the guy, you know, enjoy Kings basketball. He's like, oh, to be disloyal after 48 years of being in, hey, look, they were wearing Oakland jerseys. I mean, how much more loyalty would you want? I mean, still trying to show you we care about this city. Now, some say, now do the Raiders. I can't. The Raiders have disqualified themselves from any credible conversation in the history of Bay Area sports. The only reason why they left is because Mark Davis needed a state to be his welfare daddy and pay for everything. And Nevada said, we'll be that daddy. So he left. Without that, he is not a genius. And with it, he's not a genius. Joe Lacob did this with his own money, not other people's money.
Do you want me to get involved at this point?
No, I would like you to take the rest of the show off this topic specifically.
Well, no, because you were on a roll, and I didn't want to interrupt your roll. I'm not trying to be snotty about this. I don't have a whole lot of arguments to make here, because if you want to talk about loyalty, we'll start with the fact that Joe Lacob said the day he bought the team, my long-term goal is to build an arena in San Francisco. He never said and never pretended that Oakland was the epicenter of his thoughts. And it took as long as it did to build it, because the one thing he was not good at was reading politics in the city. I mean, he went to the wrong people to get the wrong stuff approved and ended up moving his arena from where he wanted it to 20 piers down the road.
Well, what he realized is that, hey, to do this project here, and he could have used all the political will to hammer that project through if he wanted to do it, but he didn't, because it cost $2 billion to build the land to then his stadium, which cost billions of dollars, would then sit on. The pier 38, and where he wanted to do it, had to basically be ripped down and built again, and that would have been cost prohibitive. So that's why he didn't do it.
Well, but he also didn't do it because he kept trying to work with a mayor who didn't have the kind of corporate fingers to be able to make that stuff turn around. But we're getting lost afield. Point is, Joe Lacob never said anything about staying in Oakland, while Mark Davis said it repeatedly. And while John Fisher, through Dave Cavill, has also said it repeatedly, the one difference, and I'm not going to blow Joe Lacob's horn here, because leaving one city where he's very successful for another one, that's just business. And
hey,
that
I loved Oracle. It was great.
Yeah.
It was great.
I mean, it's just, you know, and people who live in Oakland and who feel the way they do, I get it. And you get to feel the way you want. But the difference is Mark Davis failed at running a football team in a way that would make him the same kind of money that his fellow owners did, because his dad didn't have any businesses upon which to amortize the Raiders. All they were was the football team.
They were lousy businessmen. Even beyond that, if that's all you had, you could have still, if you weren't just schmuck-level businessmen, done great business.
Well, they were doing great business until the deal changed. And the deal was that billionaires started buying teams. And Al Davis, at no point in his life, was ever a billionaire. You know, he had a team that was worth billions or a billion, but he was never going to sell it. So that's essentially, he's making his money based on whatever profits he can get year after year. And that's different than being a billionaire. When the billionaires bought in, he was doomed. And his son, is equally doomed. I mean, I don't know if you've been reading the stories about Dan Ventrell, who's basically suing the Raiders for wrongful termination, but he's been leaking, you know, the inner laundry of the team, and it's run basically like a push cart.
Yeah, they basically fired their entire C-suite since moving to everyone responsible for the Raiders ending up in Vegas has basically been fired.
Yeah, and it's not because they didn't deliver on what they promised, which was to get him out of Oakland. It's that Mark Davis still doesn't have the kind of financial throw weight that he would want other than selling the team, which he doesn't want to do. So he's in a slowly constricting box, and eventually he's going to be forced to sell because he can't survive. John Fisher is actively trying to poison the place where he works and where he makes his money, to the point where he's had to go back to baseball to get revenue sharing reinstalled. And he's still sort of playing this, you know, Oakland won't play ball with us, when it's not Oakland's job to play ball with you. It's your job to play ball with them, because they're the ones with the land. You don't have it. So fix that, or do what you're doing, which is trying to ruin the experience for every A's fan, you know, from the moment you bought it to now, to the next 10 years.
And that's why he's the worst. That's why he's the worst, because Charlie might have been bad at it 50 years ago. But this guy is intentionally, like, there's no doubt that Charlie O'Finley wanted the A's to be a success. Right? He wanted it. Like, conceptually, he failed in accomplishing what he wanted. John Fisher is accomplishing what he wanted. That's why he takes the cake, Ray.
Well, but why Finley is worse was because he was trying to move the team from Oakland to Denver the year that he had moved the team to Oakland, because he was angry about the fact that they sold out on night one, and by night 20, with a pretty good team, they were drawing 4,000 and 5,000 a game because Oakland fans didn't want to give this guy money. And so he actively tried to move the team almost as soon as he moved it there, which is the same thing. The only difference was that the other owners hated Finley in a way that they just disregard Fisher. And they told him, you're not moving this team. We won't let you, because the rules of baseball at the time prevented you from doing that. In fact, they still do. You have to get the other owner's permission to move your franchise. And it took Charlie Finley 11 years to finally give up and sell, because he couldn't move it. John Fisher is trying to make that a condition where owners will change their mind. And the fact is, that's going to fail, because the other owners don't care about John Fisher.
Couple of things here on the Xfinity mobile text line. Somebody says, you guys keep talking about how terrible Al Davis or Mark Davis has done, while ignoring he's increased their worth by $3 billion and raking in cash with the new stadium. But that's not money going to him. He has funny money. He's all of his money's on paper. He's not liquid.
That's money that has to go back to the state, first of all.
Right. None of it's liquid.
$750 million of profit, he's got to pay off that state.
Right. He is a $10,000 millionaire, if there ever was one.
Yeah. And beyond that, you know, Mark Davis didn't do that. Nevada did that, because the value of your franchise is not pinned to how well your team does or what your TV market is. It is the real estate. The real estate is why the A's or the Raiders have doubled in value, not because of the value of the worth of Mark Davis's work.
Well, it's the real estate on one hand, but it's even more the media deal that your real estate then attracts to that area.
If your pet dog could take the Raiders and move them to Vegas, he would be as smart as Mark Davis is, because that's all this is. This is just, he had no real estate, now he has real estate.
Somebody says, now do Charles Johnson. Well, look, if we're just talking from a how is your game day experience under this owner and how's the success of the franchise gone, he's been fantastic. Charles Johnson only turns into the worst, you know, character in the room when you start looking at what he's done with his profits and who he supports politically, which is a level of putrid that I think most people who listen to us would agree that's a level of putrid. Like, he's funding the Marjorie Taylor Greene crowd. So he is a despicable human being in terms of where he puts his profits, but where he put his franchise and the success the franchise has had, they've been pretty good. You know, you have to compartmentalize. By the way, if you don't think that John Fisher is every bit of the Republican scumbag that he is, you're nuts. He is. And beyond that, he's doing nothing to put any money back into the community that he claims to care about. Actually, he doesn't claim to care about it. There's only empirical evidence he doesn't.
He's made it clear in 100 different ways he doesn't care.
Yeah.
You know, the only thing that he has done that Finley didn't do was cut back on fan services, trying to make the team irrelevant in the town. And the fact is the team isn't irrelevant in the town. The reason why it doesn't draw is not because the product is repellent. It's because he's repellent. This is an organic boycott. I mean, they had 3,100 last night. 3,100. You know, I mean, that's not a statement about we don't like Ramon Laureano or we don't like Mark Kotze. It's we don't like John Fisher and we're not going to give him any dough. It's no more complicated than that. And that's what happened with Charlie Finley as well. It just, people in Oakland know when they're getting sold a bill. And the fact that they were as loyal as they were to the Raiders was because the Raiders were the first team that ever went to Oakland. And that there's a DNA thing that's involved there. It's just that people couldn't give up the Raiders, even after they left once already, which is why Oakland fans, even the ones like the guy that, you know, you're grinding on, you know, I get why they're wounded, because they've been told they're not good enough four times by three teams.
We're going to get back to the fact that we got game one of the Western Conference Finals starting tomorrow night at Chase Center. We got our pal Anthony Slater joining us next here on 95.7 The Game. So stick around. We're brought to you by your Northern California Toyota dealers.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode and catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Now back to Damon and Ratto. Brought to you by BMW Fairfield on 95.7 The Game.
If you are looking for all the best Warriors content from 95.7 The Game, text the word Warriors to 20357. You hit the subscribe button and then boom, it all goes right there. You can find it. You'll certainly find this conversation we're about to have with our pal Anthony Slater here on 95.7 The Game. We are, what, less than 26 hours? We're getting closer and closer to game one of the Western Conference Finals, Warriors and Dallas Mavericks. What's going on, Slater? How you doing, man?
You got the countdown clock going.
We
got
to come. Absolutely, we do. It feels big. I mean, that's the thing. The playoffs are big, and then you get to the Western Conference Finals, and it feels even bigger. And I honestly didn't think the Warriors were going to be here in the month of February. I honestly didn't think the Warriors would be here if they were getting on a plane going back to Memphis for Game 7. But now that they are here, I think that they will go to the NBA Finals, even though Luka is one of the hardest guys to guard in the history of basketball. And I guess that's kind of where we're going to open this conversation. How do the Warriors go about slowing down Luka in any way, shape, or form, or do you basically go full on Jokic here and you say, let him get his and shut down everything else?
Well, the issue for them in the whole, you know, with that strategy, which I generally think is kind of in their ethos, is against Jokic, you had Draymond Green and Kevon Looney as your one-on-one defenders, right? The Warriors do not. Those are probably the Warriors' two best defenders. They don't have that on the wing. Andrew Wiggins, solid, has proven to be pretty good in one-on-one situations. Gary Payton hurt. Andre Iguodala hurt. So you don't want to. And the other thing is, like, Dallas will hunt mismatches much more than Denver was able to, or most other teams do. So they're going to try to get Steph on him, Jordan Poole on him. You don't want to just let him do that all game, go against the guys he wants in isolation all game, which mostly won't be Draymond or Looney. So there are unique ways of doing that where you're not overloading, double-teaming, allowing Dorian Finney-Smith to get open threes and Maxi Kleba. But generally, and you talk to the people around it, they think they're going to switch it up a lot, throw a bunch of different coverages and a bunch of different bodies at them.
How many different coverages can they throw at this and make it stay fresh? Because, I don't know how many they finally threw at Jokic, but it was easier because he didn't travel as much of the court as Doncic does. So do they have to throw more things at him, or do they have to throw fewer things at him that just work better?
Yeah, several. And a lot of it depends on the personnel out there, not only, you know, who the Warriors have on the court, but who Dallas does. But, you know, for example, Dwight Powell is going to start, you would assume. He started every playoff game to this point. I mean, Looney will probably start. I think in that scenario, as you saw in the regular season, the Warriors will play drop coverage with Kevon Looney kind of sitting there, and it's like kind of a softer double team where he's laying back because you don't worry about a pick and pop because Dwight Powell is a rim running, like, you know, Clint Capella type. Whereas when Kleba gets on the court, he'll just, you know, pop out for a three, and you don't want to give that up. So that's when you probably start to have to go maybe a little bit more switching. I think Dallas would love it if they play kind of that soft switching scheme where it's like anytime you set a screen anywhere, the Warriors will just give up the switch. If Jordan Poole's on the court, I think you need to hedge and get back a little bit harder, try to keep Wiggins in that matchup. You can obviously blitz really hard with a double team, and maybe the Warriors will do that a little bit collectively, but I think that's something the Mavericks are going to do a lot more to Steph on the other side of the floor. And then as far as different coverages, we saw zone defenses against Ja Morant that I think you'll see. Box and ones are a possibility, although zones are harder to do against a team like Dallas when they go five out because zones typically give up wide open threes. Dallas hits wide open threes. So, you know, there's little tweaks to different coverages. But generally, you just want to send a lot of stuff at him and try to limit the easy looks.
Anthony Slater here on 95.7 The Game. So you mentioned that, you know, the Jason Kidd, it's basically, as a coach, he's still a point guard. He is out there hunting weaknesses. And once he finds one, they'll keep leaning on it. I mean, the 538 article about how many times Chris Paul got attacked in that pick and roll in the 702 games of his career that they've tracked player movement, games 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7 of this past series rank 3rd, 5th, 2nd, 4th, and 1st in the times he was attacked as the screener in the pick and roll. So basically, Jason Kidd found something and never, ever, 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 ever went away from it. If I'm Jordan Poole, I'm a little bit worried about that.
Yeah, well, you know, it's Steph Curry too, but the one thing is Steph Curry is Tyronn Lue has already probably put up the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of Steph Curry's career, so it's not something that Steph Curry's not used to. But I think part of Kidd's strategy on that was Chris Paul is 37 years old; he can tire easy. If you tire him down, you know he loses a lot on the offensive end. And I do think you mentioned Poole. To me, he is a swing player in the series because on the other end, I think Kidd is going to double Steph a lot and make others beat the Mavericks. And Jordan Poole is the answer to that a lot of times, where you swing it to the second side and it can be Poole going to the rim, Poole taking open shots. But he's not going to be able to stay on the floor if Steve Kerr doesn't trust him in defensive coverages. And I think that's on the Warriors coaching staff to create an environment where you're not just allowing Jordan Poole to have to sit there and get just pounded on post-ups by Luka Doncic, but also it is on Jordan Poole to be physical in those moments, to, if they are doing a hedge and get back coverage, to do it, you know, quickly. And it is a test for Jordan Poole, but to be honest, Jordan Poole keeps passing tests. Every different level this season that it seems like you know, maybe he's hit a wall, or maybe when he gets benched, he's, you know, how is he going to handle it? He keeps breaking through and impressing the first round, the second round. So this is a different test than we've seen from him, but he's passed them all really to this point in his career.
Who on the Mavericks worries or troubles the Warriors other than Doncic? Because if this is just a Doncic show, I don't know how they last to win four games. But if it's Doncic plus, how much plus do they need?
Yeah, you know, obviously Brunson is probably, you would say, their second best player, second best scorer. And in a couple of the matchups, they actually had Payton on Brunson while Wiggins was on Doncic, which I think told you plenty about them thinking, like, hey, Wiggins can kind of handle that matchup. Don't put Payton on Doncic. Let Payton try to shut down Brunson. Well, they don't have Payton, obviously, in this series. So, but they're worried about, you know, Brunson as that kind of crafty physical scorer where even if it isn't Poole getting dragged into every action, if Poole's just kind of sitting there off ball thinking, hey, look, I'm not on Luka right now, I'm fine. Then they swing it over and Brunson attacks him, and suddenly Brunson has 20 points in a game. That's a huge deal. Spencer Dinwiddie, another guy in that last game that the Mavericks won against the Warriors, I think he had 20-something. You know, if he's hot from three, that's a concern. And then in Dallas this year, if you look at their playoff splits in Dallas, all of their role players shoot like crazy from three. Kleba's like 50%. Bullock and Finney Smith are in the 40s. So, that is how they lose games in this series, I think, which is the others just get going off of Luka.
So, you know, I think that Dinwiddie's going to be huge in this series. Obviously, Brunson, by the way, was putting Chris Paul in all those pick and rolls, too. It wasn't just Luka attacking. Yeah. So, yeah, Brunson, Dinwiddie, Luka, you go about having success shutting the three of them down. I mean, Warriors in six feels like a reality to me. It really does. If those guys collectively go off against you, things could change dramatically out there. Draymond against Luka, I mean, it feels, you know, like that there's a little bit of an answer there, but it also feels like that is a break in case of emergency and the ultimate counterpunch that Steve Kerr will not want to open with.
Yeah, and, you know, they've done that this year. They've had Draymond, I can remember him guarding Chris Paul on Christmas Day. I can remember him guarding Damian Lillard a few times. So it's a tool within Draymond Green's defensive, you know, toolkit, because I'm not sure there's a tool he doesn't have. But it's not necessarily, like, you like Draymond captaining the defense behind the action, you know, seeing everything in front of him, sometimes coming over for weak side blocks or, you know, selectively double teaming out of nowhere on the weak side. So, again, like you said, you don't want him all game picking up full court and all that. But maybe, you know, for stretches, maybe especially if Luka really gets going and he's hitting a step back three in particular, because if he does hit that step back he likes at a high clip, he's almost unguardable. So maybe in those moments where he hits a few of them, you just try to change up the attitude of the game, throw Draymond on him. Maybe Draymond's, like, you know, kind of talking a little bit too and just trying to change Luka's mood a little bit.
How about the concept of human fouls for Kuminga, who is better than just a, you know, six fouls, obviously, but even Juan Toscano-Anderson? Like, I could see them being deployed in an overly physical way against Luka, even though that really isn't the Warriors' way. Or do you think I'm off?
Yeah, no, I mean, look, you got to think about a lot of options here. In the regular season, they like the Kuminga matchup on Luka. If you go watch tape, you know, I'd say he's probably maybe fourth or fifth most you know, possessions where he started the possession on Luka. And, you know, you mentioned the fouling. You know, that's what's kept coming off the floor at times. Like, there's just the over physicality, jumping at pump fakes. Luka has been compared by the Warriors coach to Harden, and that includes the foul baiting. So I think if Luka does see Kuminga on him early in the series, he's just going to start, you know, head pump faking a little bit, jump into him, fall to the ground, boom, that's a quick whistle. I think maybe early in quarters the Warriors can try that, because you're not worried about bonus and foul trouble. Obviously, you're not worried about Kuminga fouling out necessarily. So at least get a look, because I think physically he provides something that none of the other Warriors options provide. And then as far as JTA, he's actually played well in this Dallas matchup, even going back to last season. He's guarded Luka some, but he's just been so buried on the bench that as they go through their options, I'm just skeptical that we'll see him.
Is there any significant difference in the coaching, or does coaching at this stage not matter a whole lot except between games when tweaks need to be made? Is there any real in-game advantage for either Kidd or Kerr?
We'll see. You know, Kidd has, you know, I thought it was something interesting Kidd did before game 7 in Phoenix. He like switched up which side of the floor that each half is played on, because he wanted the defense in front of him, his defense in front of him in the second half. And I don't know, do you guys see that mic'd up segment where
yeah.
he was like, you know, basically seemed like a sixth defender on the floor. His hands are up in the air. He's ordering his defenders around. It seems to me like he just has such good control over that defense and wants it in front of him. So he's basically the puppet master. So I guess that matters. You know, you very rarely see Steve Kerr that demonstrative within a possession. So that's a difference, I guess. You know, halftime adjustments matter. There's times where the Warriors suddenly decide, hey, we're going to a box and one this possession. Hey, we're going to a 1-2-2 zone. Like, that stuff tends to matter. I thought, I think it was game 4, where Taylor Jenkins even admitted post-game that the game completely changed when the Warriors went to zone for like a 7-possession stretch. It completely threw Memphis out of rhythm. They weren't ready for it. So that type of stuff matters. But I don't know that I'd sit here and say which team necessarily has an advantage. You almost have to just see how the games play out.
Don't you think, though, that with Kerr being back on the bench, that, you know, variety will be deployed maybe more often than Mike Brown was comfortable deploying that variety? Or since he's sort of the defensive coach, was that not the issue?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, Mike Brown is the guy that calls like, hey Steve, let's go to the 1-2-2 and all that, and like he's the one that'll run up to Steve if Steve's at the scores table dealing with all the other stuff that a head coach deals with and say, hey, let's change up for these two possessions. I just think Mike Brown was so, I guess you could say, distracted with all like the CEO type duties and head coaching duties that he had to go through, that it's just harder for him to like be sitting on the bench like thinking of only defensive strategies. So I just think because it bumps Mike Brown back into a more comfortable role, simplified coaching role, that you will see more variety because he's able to just do that.
Who do you think is the best player in this series? Do you think it's Luka? And if you do, how much does having the best player in this series really matter to this series if the Warriors have the better team?
You're trying to get me clipped on Twitter with this one. Luka Doncic is the best player. No, I think...
Let me help you out. Luka Doncic is the best player in this series.
Yeah. Yeah, and certainly he's had the best playoffs. Now, you know, the chemistry that Steph Curry just, like, you know, forces on a court and just the ways he bends defenses, and it's clearly going to be, like, such a major part of Jason Kidd's scheme. Like, he might have an equal impact as Luka Doncic on this series, even if Luka Doncic is finishing with, you know, 38, 12, and 10s, and Steph's at 25, 8, and 8, or something like that. But what was generally the question besides who was the best player in the series? Because I agree with you. At this stage of their career, Luka consistently, you know, has better numbers for sure.
Yeah, but how much does as long as you got the best player in the series, you got a puncher's chance, really calculate in your mind to this one? Or should the Warriors' experience, depth, and system carry them past the single most individually talented player all around, maybe in the NBA? I mean, you know, he does things that, I mean, it's LeBron and Durant and Luka can basically get away with that.
Yeah. I mean, the Warriors' history will tell you they will, you know, happily not have the best player in a particular series and still win the series pretty comfortably. I mean, think about how many times they did it to LeBron. You know, could argue Durant in the 2016 West Finals when they faced him. And even, you know, round one, I mean, you could argue Jokic was the best player. You know, Steph was coming off the bench that series. Jokic was averaging 31 and 10 or whatever. But the system does it. Now, the one thing I would say is, like, they are not as good as they used to be. This Warriors team is not the dynasty version. They can't just rely on system and everything else. And particularly the versatile defenses. I think one of the trouble LeBron used to have with the Warriors is like the waves of defenders. Iguodala to Durant, you know, Harrison Barnes back in the day, Draymond will take you for stretches. they don't have that swarming wings, arms everywhere type defense. When they go small, it's like Jordan Poole, like an older Klay Thompson is suddenly the three. Andrew Wiggins is your really skinny four man. So I just think Luka doesn't have to face nearly the defensive oomph that the LeBron used to, even Harden used to when they played the Warriors. But the Warriors can maybe, if they could score enough, could still win this series. I have them in seven. I don't know. You sound like you're pretty confident in the Warriors.
Warriors in six is the way I look at it, because I think that they're good enough to take a game in Dallas. I mean, I really do. I mean, they win a game on the road in every playoff series. I wouldn't be stunned to see it happen here. The fact that they have home court is just amazing to me. Like, I thought that there was a better chance that the Warriors would be in the NBA Finals than have home court advantage in the Western Conference Finals. That's how I think we all thought that the Suns were a sure thing to at least be meeting the Warriors in the Western Conference Finals. And it was shocking, but I still don't think all of a sudden now the Mavericks are ready to be NBA champions as they're built. If it's just up to, is Luka ready? Yeah, Luka's ready to be in the Hall of Fame right now. Like, that's how good he is. But I don't think the Dallas Mavericks look like an NBA champion to me, as great as they looked in that Game 7.
Yeah, you know, but what's crazy is, like, this is as wide open a Final Four as I can remember in a while.
Where, it is.
You know, I'm not sure the Warriors themselves, if you took them back a month ago, said, are you ready to go win the title? I mean, they obviously have their title core, but, you know, there were very shaky moments, as you mentioned, a couple months ago. Boston, I mean, they were 500 in January. Miami, you would assume they don't have the top-level talent. But one of these four teams is going to win, which is kind of crazy. And I get, you know, I don't know who you'd favor, but it's a wide open Final Four and a fun one, by the way, which it seems to me that the country is enjoying. Ratings are up. Conversations about it seem to be good, positive, and I like what's going on in the NBA right now.
Okay, since you both have the Warriors advancing in a varying number of games, who, if you tied them down and shot them all full of sodium pentothal, would they rather play in the final?
Miami, for sure. And I think that's, like, you know, generally when people say, oh, this is what the Warriors think, it's like they forget that there's so many different opinions within an organization that, you know, you go talk to 10 different people, they'll say 10 different things. I think it would be nearly unanimous if you talk to Warriors people, like, with true serum in them, that Miami, just because Boston is, I think, number one, a better team, but also just the way they can defend the Warriors with Smart and, you know, obviously Robert Williams on the back end, two huge wings in Brown and Tatum. They would have such trouble scoring against Boston. Whereas to me, Miami's a little bit like East Coast Warriors. You know, they have heat culture and they have all these, you know, proven veteran dudes, but I think when it comes to actual, like, basketball schematics, it would just be much easier for them to scheme up against the Miami team.
Do you think Otto Porter Jr. is out there game one?
Yes. Yes, I do. He's practiced the last 2 days, apparently feeling good. So I'd be shocked if you don't see Porter tomorrow.
Slater, thank you very much, man. Appreciate your time as always.
Yep, thanks for having me.
Thank you. Anthony Slater here on 95.7 The Game. So somebody says, Damon, I never heard you spew such garbage. When Curry shows you he's better in this series, I want you to admit that you were wrong. Now, what do you mean? Because I'm picking the Warriors to win, but I'm picking the Warriors to win on the strength of their entire team, which we all know is driven by Curry. But if we are talking about individually talented players, Steph Curry is coming off his statistical, measurable worst year of his career since winning MVPs. And Luka Doncic is performing better in the postseason than Michael Jordan could have ever dreamed of in terms of all-around play, in terms of the three categories. You talk defense, that's another story. But Luka is the realest of real deals. The realest of real deals. You to anyone to claim that a 34-year-old Steph Curry is the better player against a 23-year-old Luka Doncic means you really do not know who Luka is, what he's done, and how on the very first day of his NBA career, if he never improved an iota He's a first ballot Hall of Famer.
I don't know about that yet, only because it's still awfully early to make that assessment. But let me say this. This argument, Curry v. Doncic, is an argument between resume and right now. Right now, if you lined up 30 NBA coaches and said, okay, you pick between those two, you have to pick one to start your team to make a run at the title. 25 would say Doncic. 5 would say Curry. If you say resume, there is not a discussion to be had. Curry's resume is infinitely better.
Of course.
It's also three times as long. So, you know, really, it's almost an artificial argument. And ultimately, because the Warriors aren't going to win with Curry alone. And Dallas is not going to win with Doncic alone. It's who else is there that you can rely on. And ultimately, you know, the Warriors probably have more guys that you can say, yeah, we can rely on these guys.
Look, there is an opportunity. There is an opportunity for the Warriors to win a game in this series in which Steph Curry does not play well in. That opportunity does not exist for the Dallas Mavericks without Luka playing well. Any game that we can all agree on, Luka Doncic played poorly in, I 1,000,000,000% promise you the Dallas Mavericks lost that game. Steph Curry can have a poor game, and because he's on the better team, which is obviously built in his name, image, and likeness in so many different ways, you know, Curry is the catalyst to all Warriors' success, even if he's not having that individual success in any given moment. That's how important he is. But the conversation about who Luka is one that's still confusing people. So I thought that when we come on back here, we'll explain to you exactly who Luka Doncic is, because there are some who still do not understand it. There are some who do not understand it. So we will help you understand it when we come on back here to 95.7 The Game. We're brought to you by Fremont Bank, full-service banking, no compromises.
Now back to Damon and Ratto. Brought to you by BMW Fairfield on 95.7 The Game.
Hey, if you want to win tickets to Game 1, be listening to the Morning Roast between 7:30 and 8 o'clock tomorrow morning. It's a chance to win tickets into Game 1 of the Western Conference Finals. You listen all day on Thursday for a chance to win tickets to Game 2. Everyone got that? Good. Lucas just walked in here and told me something I wasn't even aware of, which is amazing. Tonight is the NBA Draft Lottery. They're going to determine the bouncing balls tonight.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I honestly, I'm so deep into the playoffs, that didn't even ping on my radar. Bad job, NBA media, for even bringing that up. I mean, I haven't seen really anybody talking about it on my timeline today. I'm surprised. Normally, that gets a little bit more buzz than it's gotten this year.
Well, there isn't a Cade Cunningham for everybody to lust over. Last year was...
Well, you get a Chet Holmgren, you get Paolo Bonchero from Duke.
Nobody is jumping out the way Cunningham did last year. As, you know, not only just the mortal lock as number one, but it was also a significantly deeper draft from everything I've seen. So I think... And the other thing is, we've been paying attention to actual basketball because there is actual basketball to be paid attention to, rather than... the draft lottery.
So I want everyone to pay attention to the segment that I'm about to do on Luka Doncic. And look, in no way am I trying to make the argument that Luka is a bigger or better NBA entity than Steph Curry. Steph Curry is one of the single greatest basketball players I've ever seen with my own two eyes. He is super duper special. He was ours. We got to watch him revolutionize and change the way basketball is played. And Luka Doncic grew up in the Steph Curry revolution, which allowed him to take some of the things that Steph does even further, or it emboldened him to do things in his career early on that until Steph Curry came around, you didn't get. Again, Steph Curry is the pro's pro that everyone has sort of modeled their game after going forward. Because if you can't shoot a three, you basically can't even be drafted into the NBA anymore. It's kind of where we are.
Yeah, yeah. There are so few guys who get a pass on that. You know, maybe Evan Mobley.
Right. You have to be extraordinary.
Yeah. You have to be extraordinary at a position where it is so devalued that if you're really good at it, you got to be better than that. Being a pure center is almost an anachronism, but there's still a few guys who can do that. And frankly, we're looking at one in Nikola Jokic, because he's not a guy who's going to live beyond the arc. He'll take a shot from out there, but by and large, he does his work within 10 feet.
Somebody's trying to say on the Xfinity mobile text line, Damon, you need to preference everything you're saying about Luka in terms of recency bias. No. What I'm saying about Luka's got nothing to do with what just happened in Game 7 or the recency bias of how well he's been playing in this playoff. Somebody said, what did he do last year? Where was he leading the NBA last year in scoring? Because Steph did. Well, Luka was sixth in scoring last year, so not far away under any circumstances. And he is a much more dominant player than Steph has ever been in terms of passing the basketball. Pure point guard. Today, Luka Doncic is a better pure point guard than Steph Curry has ever been. I know that sounds like heretic talk to some of you. Steph Curry, as a point guard, has averaged 8.5 assists in one season in his career. Luka Doncic averages 8.5 assists in every single game he's ever played. He's just eclipsed the 250 career game mark, which means he's an NBA baby, an absolute NBA baby. He's in the Western Conference Finals after his fourth full NBA season. Already a three-time All-Star and a two-time All-NBA player with Rookie of the Year accolades. Steph Curry didn't make an All-Star team until year five. Career playoff averages for Luka Doncic. He's 32.7 points per game, 9 rebounds, 9 assists, 1 steal. He's a career 26-8-8 player coming off a 28-9-9 season. Luka Doncic arrived in the NBA as a fully formed 19-year-old who won titles against men when he was still a boy over in Europe. He was playing a level of basketball that was a monster level of basketball for just a kid his age to be playing. He signed a 5-year contract with Real Madrid when he was 13 years old. When he was 14 years old, he was putting up 25 and 14 a game against 18-year-old kids. By the time he was 19 years old, he's the EuroLeague MVP and EuroLeague Finals MVP. Luka Doncic. What makes him probably most different from Steph Curry, other than just physical size and height, is that Curry came into the NBA and became Steph Curry. Steph Curry was a good basketball player until 2013 and 14, when he became a great basketball player. Luka Doncic is the rarest of NBA players because he really didn't have to improve from the guy he was on day one to go down in history as one of the best players ever. If Luka Doncic only keeps up with the statistics that he averages and does not improve at all, he's a first ballot unanimous Hall of Famer. That's who he is. And for those who want to say, keep Luka Doncic's name out of the Jordan conversation because Jordan was a much better defender, you're right. Michael Jordan, an incredible defender. Luka Doncic is not. But in terms of rebounding, passing, he so dwarfs Michael Jordan's ability or production, whichever you want to say comes first or second, that you can't argue it. He scores like Jordan, rebounds like a center, and passes like one of the great point guards to ever play. That's who Luka Doncic is. He's 23 years old. He's already, listen to this. I mean, listen to this. Luka Doncic is already the Mavericks' franchise leader in triple-doubles. This has not been a franchise bereft of point guard play. The Mavericks have been around for 42 seasons. They've had a Hall of Fame point guard for a third of their existence. They had 14 seasons of already enshrined in the Basketball Hall of Fame point guard play. Jason Kidd played 8 seasons, exactly 500 career games in Dallas. He is 4th on the all-time triple-doubles list. Steve Nash, 6 seasons in Dallas. Now, he was never much of a career triple-double guy because Steve Nash couldn't rebound to save his life. He only has 3 career triple-doubles. But he played 408 games in Dallas. And there have been a lot of other very good point guards who played in Dallas. Nick Van Exel, Derek Harper, Jason Terry, J.J. Barea. You know, good. Very good. Luka Doncic is the franchise's triple-double leader in just 264 career games. He's already 10th all-time in triple-doubles ahead of Draymond Green. In his last game, Game 7 of the demolition against Phoenix, Doncic became the first player in the last 25 postseasons to equal or exceed the opposing team's point total in the half by himself. Now, Phoenix was terrible, but Luka Doncic took over that game 90 seconds into it, and he strangled the entire thing through 3 quarters. It wasn't Spencer Dinwiddie and Jalen Brunson. They were the difference in, did they win by 30 tonight? But Luka could have won that game almost by himself. That's who he was early on. The stones that he has as a 23-year-old this early in his career, it's unbelievable. Look, Luka is the capital M-A-N. And I just want you to understand that. Because you either need to know why the Warriors might be up against it, or you need to know who the Warriors just got past. Either way, you're dealing with a significant NBA entity. A significant future Hall of Famer based on the fact that all he needs to do is stay healthy. All he needs to do is stay healthy and take care of his own body. He is assured to be in the Hall of Fame, putting up these numbers, projecting a 10-year career. He's easily in the Hall. This guy is the single best day one NBA player of all time. He's even better than LeBron on day one. He's the greatest, I just got here, let me show you what I can do basketball player this league has ever seen. Maybe, but for Wilt Chamberlain, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Yeah, I mean, that's, and maybe
that's
Magic.
It. Maybe Magic.
I mean, he's in, based on, okay, day one, okay, he played at a higher level than any of those guys did when they came out to play in the pros, because European basketball is exceptional. And the thing that sort of separated him from everybody else is that that's a league in which at 18, you're on a B team. You're on a youth team. You don't get those minutes, and you don't get to be the best player on your team if it's a team that has any aspirations in Europe. And he was the center of Real Madrid. And that's an elite team. And he basically learned by playing against guys who lit their next cigarette with their last cigarette while they were playing. So he got off to a great training start that collegiate players don't get. Secondly, if he's not the best, he's in a discussion now, you know, just based on that one day one parameter. I don't know that I'm ready to just say, he's a first ballot Hall of Famer, only because there are so many things that haven't been done yet around him.
Right. I mean, or he could die in an airplane crash.
No,
like
I'm
Thurman
not talking
Munson.
About dying in an airplane crash. I'm talking about if he ends up on teams like this one, where he is head and shoulders ahead of the rest of his help, and it never gets better, because that can get held against you when you go into the room. In terms of what he's done, if this is what he's going to do every year until 2030, yeah, he's in the Hall of Fame, and relatively easily.
Yeah, he's a career 28-9-9. Career. No, excuse me. This season, he was 28-9-9. Career, he's 26-8-8.
Yeah, no, there's nothing about his game except his consistency as a distance shooter that you don't fall in love with.
If he ever takes a significant step forward from what he is right now, may the Lord have mercy on everyone's NBA soul. And for someone who says, hey, you know what? He's got to win chips. Without chips, he's nothing. You are the same moron who was trying to convince everyone that Larry Bird was better than Michael Jordan because Michael Jordan hadn't won an NBA title. You were wrong then. You're wrong now. Luka Doncic doesn't need to win anything. He's better than Charles Barkley ever will think of being as a basketball player. By the way, welcome, one and all, to your 5 o'clock hour, which means we're officially 25 hours away from tip-off of the Western Conference Finals.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.